And hello again, everybody. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. I am Russ Salzberg, along with two-time Super Bowl champion David Deal. And the number for you to call is 201-939-4513, or on Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. And it is Tuesday morning. And let's just be positive. It's a Tuesday morning, and this Tuesday morning is better than yesterday morning, because yesterday morning was absolutely dreadful. We know that. Look, David, the way I look at it, however you want to say it, they played lousy, they pulled the stinkeroo, whatever you want to call it, and I'm not naive. Nobody's ever accused me ever of being Mr. Softy. You're a player. You were a player. It is one game. Bad or not, it is one game, and I think what's going on, I think the people are getting a little out of control, and I'm not just talking about fans, I'll say the media as well. Justifiably, the Giants should get smacked around for their performance, but it's one game. It's not five games, it's one game.
I know, but it's a big game.
Yes, couldn't agree with you more.
Giants, and not to mention, what else does it also make? This the longest week of the season for the New York Giants, considering the fact you're coming off of a Sunday game. And now, yes, it's great that you have time to rest, but now you're waiting all the way till Monday to get back to work, to get back to change the perception of who you are as a football team. And you have everybody from the outside in talking about expectations, everything, new additions. What happened? I think it's pretty clear to see how much Odell Beckham Jr. not only means to the offense, but to this football team. Physically, he's the guy that can turn that five-yard quick slant, which we'll need as a passing offense, a quick rhythm, due to some of the problems in protection with the offensive line, to take it 60 yards like he did against the Cowboys last year to win that football game. But more than anything, just the confidence and the emotion that he brings and all of the other players feeding off of it. You could see that the Dallas Cowboys had more energy, they played faster, and they played more confident than the New York Giants, and I truly feel that it's because of one reason. They got Ezekiel Elliott back, and the most important person that scares them on the New York Giants that can completely change the entire football game wasn't on the field, Odell Beckham Jr.
I would agree with you on that, but let me ask you this. And again, you were the guy who played in the trenches. As I watched the game and I saw some of the problems, what was going on with the line and various other things. Ben called it right. There was plenty of blame to go around. Having said that, I don't know if Odell would have made a big difference. I wanted it to come out correctly.
No, absolutely.
I don't know that he would have made a big difference.
We got an hour, Russ.
Know if he would have made a big difference in that game.
I disagree.
Okay.
I disagree. Like I said, number one, you have a player that defensively were playing a lot more soft zone than they've ever played before. They were used to playing more man, more press zone, bracketing over coverages. But they just had the confidence because, number one, their defense was fresh. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys defense were fresh after the first half, because if you think about it, the fact that the Cowboys offensive line and the Cowboys offense had the ball for 20 minutes and the Giants offense were 0-for-5 on third down in the first half. I mean, that's the way to keep your defense fresh. That's the way to build momentum. And that's the way to attack the weakness of the Dallas Cowboys, which was their defense.
Yeah, I'm not minimizing, folks, what Odell Beckham Jr. brings to the table. He is clearly one of the most dynamic, explosive players in the NFL. I just, again, there was plenty of blame to go around. And again, the sky is not falling. I understand they had an absolute lousy game. You brought out a point just before. Not only does it make the Lions game now huge, it's not just to win this one because you don't want to go 0-2. What's following the Lions? The Philadelphia Eagles. All of a sudden.
And then at Tampa Bay.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you could be facing a real hole early in the season. So you don't want to say, I hate to say, a game two and a game three are must-win situations.
But they are.
But coming off of that performance, it is a situation where they have to take care of business. Having said that, though, let me remind you, when you won one of your first
started 0-2.
Not only did you start 0-2,
we got rolled.
Steve Spagnuolo came over, and everybody was saying, "What the hell is the big deal about this defensive guru?" 80 points the defense gave up. 80, and in the third game, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you might have been losing at halftime.
We were losing at halftime in Washington. Yeah, in the fourth quarter, fourth down stop, goal line by the defense.
Boom, and everything changed.
No question. I understand completely where you're saying or what you're saying, and I understand exactly where you're going with your comments and your argument. And the way that the game turned out on Sunday – yeah, you could sit here and some people can say, I don't think Odell would have made that big of a difference because of the way that the offense for the Cowboys were able to control the game. But the biggest thing that you always hear and you hear people talk about, halftime adjustments. Do you really make halftime adjustments? The Giants did.
Did, yes.
They did. You think about the opening drive in the second half. You had, 16 plays, 68 yards, 944. And you settled for 3 points. Defense coming off of being fresh in halftime. You have a 9-minute drive. You come out. You start doing an end around. You run an end around screen. You go 12 personnel. You bring two tight ends in. You start getting the toss. Eli gets a nice check when he gets it down towards the goal line to Shepard right before the clock goes off. Is able to adjust at the line of scrimmage. Gets it to Shepard. Now you're looking at a first and goal on the 4. Then you get up. 2nd and 2. Then what happens?
Sack. And that was, sack. You know what? They lost. To me, you could see the shoulders slump after they came off with just a field goal.
You could see the energy and the momentum completely at that point swing to the Dallas Cowboys, because that was almost to a point where you saw the Giants team go back to revert to almost 15 to where it was like, oh, boy, here we go again. And that was on a point where now here you're looking at a defense – that only gave up throughout an entire game 19 points, and they were out on the field for 60-70% of the game. So it really was difficult to watch. And in those situations, giving up a sack on first and goal, you know you're one-on-one. You know that the protection is going the opposite way. The last place Eric Flowers can get beat is on the inside. At least if you get beat outside, you give a fighting chance to where Eli's at the goal line and he can step up and make a play. And then the other one, the early here, let me look at, I have it written down. When was the first sack was in, it was opening drive.
Right.
Believe it or not. 3rd and 11. Jerry Hart, you know on 3rd and 11, they're losing and they don't have their 3 prolific pass rushers out on the field. What happened during the preseason where you guys had problems? Were when the defensive line were running stunts and running games. What did you think they were going to do? You knew that they were going to try to run some stunner game on 3rd and 11. So for you guys to set on different levels and not to say, hey, you know, we used to say bingo, bingo, bingo. Just take a kick back. At least you guys are on the same level. If something does happen, you could punch and pass it. That's just communication. And that's just football IQ, knowing that what you put on film in the preseason and last year, if you didn't correct it, they're coming at you with it right away.
You make a good point, though, because in fairness, they did make major adjustments at halftime. Because,
yes.
Because you went from, the plays were 47-20.
Yeah.
I think it was 49-20, something like that in the first half, Cowboys to the Giants. They come out, they're going down almost a 9-minute drive, whatever it was.
Getting it to Shep, getting it to Ingram, spreading the football around. Yeah.
But as soon as that happened, all the good from that drive went out the window because you could see the attitude change. That would have been a 16-7 game, and you're feeling good, and you got momentum. You start the second half the right way. Instead, it went backwards after that.
And then from that point, what do? Those adjustments that you made at halftime, you're in quicksand. You're just trying to get yourself out, and then it's an uphill battle because what are you trying to do? You're trying to stretch the field and make plays that they're not giving you. So then you're going underneath on short routes. So on a 3rd and 6, you have a 4-yard route for the receiver to break a tackle and make the extra gain. He's not doing it. So then you start putting more pressure on yourself and you start digging yourself deeper and deeper. And I think that's exactly what happened in this game.
All right, what do you say we get to the phone calls? 201-939-45.
I don't think anybody's going to call. Nobody's fired up about this.
Let's just not make it the suicide hotline. Let's just talk. It's Big Blue Kickoff. Let's have some fun and some good conversation, and let's start the day off with Nick from the Meadowlands. Nick, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up, Nicky?
Hey, Russ, the principal's not happy.
The principal's not happy.
No.
But you remember what we were talking about.
Yes, yes, yes.
And Mr. David Deal, the first time I've been able to talk to you. Huge fan. Thank you for your service.
Greatly appreciate it,
usually I don't call during the season because, you know, I'm just one of those guys. I don't like to call and complain if they lose, or I don't like to go, you know, get too hyped up if they win. I like to just sit back and watch football. But anyway, I agree with everything you're saying, definitely. And the line, definitely the right side, they got a problem. And like you said, in preseason, you saw Sheldon Richardson running right over Jerry with that stunt. And they're going to keep doing it until they can prove themselves otherwise.
Saw it in Cleveland.
So, I hope that they, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe they're going to move some pieces around over there. Or,
well, let's
you know better than anybody, David. You know, you guys lost your first two games that year, and plus they said the year before the line wasn't that good, and look how you guys turned out. So
yeah, but when they lost those first 2 years, and thank you for the call, Nick, but when they lost those first two games with your first Super Bowl, that was a result of some shoddy defense, not the offensive line at that time.
A combination of everything.
Again, you know, you say, enough. Listen, we're not absolving the offensive line here, so folks, don't misread. We know that's a major problem, and that major problem needs to be corrected. I'm not saying it's not correctable, but again,
I mean, look around the NFL and look at the games of the offenses that struggled this year. The week one, Seattle, Russell Wilson had absolutely no time. We saw Drew Brees getting his lights beat out of him last night. And we saw another team in Minnesota be able to create something with their offensive line to turn things around.
A guy by the name of Brady was getting smacked around on
Tom
Thursday
Brady
night too.
We saw him getting hit. San Francisco. Who else? The list can go on and on and on of when you're not able, especially on the road, to get a consistent run game going to fight and stay in third and intermediates to where you're not dropping back in seven step and you can run 3 and 5 step drops and play action. When you don't have a run game going and you're not in those third and intermediates and you're putting yourself in third and longs, it is a difficult obstacle to overcome. And that's for any offensive line, let alone veteran players who have played, let alone a unit that now is fighting to mesh together like they should. And in your regard, Nick, about what are they going to do in regards to changes? Nobody's guaranteed a starting position the entire season. You're guaranteed a starting spot that week. You have to earn it week in and week out and based upon the way that you practice. So in regards to the Giants, if they make changes on the offensive line, I wouldn't be surprised. We saw it getting done during the preseason. We saw DJ Fluker getting moved around. We saw Brett Jones stepping in there. They're going to make moves right now that are going to be a help to the offense, to a catalyst to the offense, and what's the best decision for the team.
So let me ask you a question as a former player. And how do players – I guess it depends who you are. But when players are put on notice, okay, and I think the O-line, fair to say, is put on notice – some players react well to that. Have you seen guys in a locker room at any position when they're on notice? And have you seen them respond? Some react well, but some go into a shell.
Yeah, some people can handle criticism and others can't. But that's based upon the coach on how he handles that specific player and the way that he talks to him. You know, for me, good, bad, and different, tell me exactly where I stand and what I need to do to improve. That's how I've always been raised. Give me the honesty. I want to know exactly what I need to do to improve myself. Grade me the hardest that I can be because that adversity turned me into a better football player.
But that's also your personality.
But that's my personality.
In general.
But as a coach, that's part of being a coach, knowing those personalities, being able to deal with them. But when there's a fire that needs to be lit under a football player that is costing your team games or possibly causing injury to another player based upon your performance, you got to let them have it. You got to let them know.
Well, I don't know if so much a fire needs to be lit as coming off that game, an inferno. Something needs to be done.
But that's also a thing that, you know, everybody here, fans that are passionate like we are about Giants football. I mean, it was very difficult yesterday waking up and realizing what took place Sunday night. But I remember what it was like being a player, waking up and having that same bad taste in my mouth, waking up sick to my stomach, knowing that, hey, what we put out there is what people think. And there's no way to change that perception. What we always say, the eye in the sky doesn't lie. What you put on film and what you do on Sunday night, not only for your fan base but for everybody else, that's what you're telling people who your identity is. The only way to change it is to go back to work and come out this Monday night and prove it otherwise.
See, I agree with that. And David makes a good point, folks. As much as you fans are having agita and are sick to your stomach over the situation with what happened Monday night, this much I know from covering sports for some 30-plus years. When you have a performance like that, trust me on this, you just verified it. Nobody feels worse than the players. And I don't care. Sometimes I say, oh, they didn't care. No, sometimes they just get their bell rung, their clock's clean. It doesn't mean they didn't give effort. Listen, when you're on the wrong side of a battering, it's not going to look good. It doesn't mean effort wasn't there. It doesn't mean you didn't care. So that needs to be, you know, rectified. I shouldn't say rectified. It needs to be adjusted in people's minds out there. They played lousy. Yeah. It was a stinker. But don't say they didn't care. Don't say the coaches didn't care. This one's matter of fact about it. That's far from being the case.
Think about all the practicing, all the training camp, all the offseason for 16 opportunities. That's all you have. You're guaranteed 16 opportunities to play on Sunday or Monday or possibly Thursday. And when that first one's gone, I will tell you this, these weeks, other than this one, like I said, is going to be the longest week for the Giants of the season. But they start flying. And before you know it, you're in your bye week, you're in week 10, and you're in the last stretch of your season. And you look back towards these games that early on that either we made the corrections from those games, we made let adversity turn it into prosperity upon the way that we work, or you're in a point where later in the season, you're looking back at these times and you're saying, we didn't learn from it and we're still in the same boat.
Bastion in Ohio. Bastion, how you doing today, my friend?
How you doing, Russ? How you doing, Dave?
Good. What's up, buddy?
Everything. So I had two things I wanted to get your thoughts on. The first thing I wanted to talk about as far as watching the game and stuff over on Sunday night. And I know called yesterday said Eli had a decent game, and Eli did have a decent game. But I wanted to get into a lot of his passes were short underneath passes to, you know, Sterling and Bahrain. But I feel like he didn't get a receiver's opportunity as far as the yards after the catch or put them in a great position to run after the catch or anything. So, like, every time they caught the ball, they can't tackle right away. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. And that was one play, particularly where Sterling, I think it was third down, Sterling caught. He threw it to Sterling, but he had to jump for it, and he got taken when he could have got the first down. I think he could have got – he had some field in front of him or a little bit – Eli threw it up a little bit where he had the catch and got tackled right away and didn't get the third down conversion. So I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Okay, Bastion, thank you very much for the call. First of all,
to go with Eli Manning and to say, well, Eli had a decent game. He had to have a good to great game to win this football game against the Cowboys without Odell Beckham Jr. And he'll be the first one, just like the coaches, he'll be the first one to say that he didn't play his best on Monday night, nor did the core group of the offense. But I think a lot has to be said in regards to Eli's performance based upon the hits that he was getting. You could see that early on after that first hit, that first drive, when things started to get pressure in his lap, not only on the outside but down the bow of his pocket. You saw him moving sometimes with his pocket presence unnecessarily. You saw throws with any quarterback that if you don't have your feet set, planted, and you're not throwing like that, you're going to have inaccurate throws. And I think it was evident in the one where he tried stepping up and he had Brandon Marshall on the third down and the throw was behind him.
Right.
Those are things that are fundamental and techniques that are related to a quarterback that it doesn't matter if you're a rookie or a 13-year vet. Those are things that you have to do in order to throw the ball accurately. So it was a conglomerate, all of it. Eli, O-line, receivers not doing everything that they were supposed to, coming back, fighting for the football, having clean breaks, showing that they were open in those responsibilities. So, like I said, it was everything in combined. But in order to win this football game, Eli needed to be good to great, not just decent.
Yeah, but in answer to Bastion, I think you're going to agree. And as far as giving receivers a chance of throwing it downfield, you have to have time to throw it downfield also. And, you know, as you say, he was getting knocked around pretty good, so he wasn't afforded the time. And like we mentioned about Tom Brady, if you're knocking him around, they don't have the time to do what they need to do.
And look at the way that Dallas played. They were playing more of a softer zone. We'll give you anything up in front. We're not letting anything get deep. And at that point, with the control that the Dallas Cowboys offensive line had on the time of possession in that game, it allowed Rob Marinelli, the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys, at times to be more aggressive, but at times to be more like, okay, we're going to sit here. This is the first down. We're not going to go past it. We're going to make sure everything goes forward, and we're not going to get run off the cliff.
Yeah, I want to address one thing on the Cowboys' offense. And I don't know how you feel about it, but it struck me watching this guy. Listen, first of all, they didn't know if he was going to play or not, but Ezekiel Elliott did play. And man, oh, man, is he a load. I mean, you want to talk about a big back with speed, but what strikes me about him, the way he always, and you know what,
Larry Zonka
used to do the same thing. It's like a one-yard loss becomes a three-yard gain. It's unbelievable all the time.
Yeah, and that's the thing that you noticed in that game. He got the tough, dirty yards.
Yeah.
He didn't have those huge chunk gains like he's had where he's had those breakout 40, 30-yard runs.
I call them money yards.
But what did he have? He had a stop in the backfield where he was able to jump cut outside the right tackle and turn a negative play into a 9-yard gain. His little simple passes that he was taking out of the backfield that were going up for 6 and 7. And then what also? We talked about the time of possession. Having a back that strong with that lower body power. When the defense started getting worn down, you saw a tackle that should have been for a 3-yard gain starting to get stretched into 6 to 7, and it just kept the time ticking for the Cowboys' offense. It let their offensive line be aggressive and tee off on the D-line and the front seven of the Giants, and it let him control the pace of the game.
He is an extraordinary talent.
He's unbelievable.
Yep. Christian in New Jersey, again, 201-939-4513 is the number, folks, or on Twitter it's hashtag Giants Chat.
Good afternoon. How are we doing today, guys?
Good, Christian. What's up, buddy?
Good. There's one thing that I've really, really noticed about the game a lot. And that one thing was I didn't see Brandon Marshall really get any separation at all. And this is what I'm saying. What I'm saying is – I seen Shepard, like, he was our number one receiver. I understand Beckham was out, so now all the attention goes to Marshall. But, I mean, come on. 2 receptions, it's a little bit ridiculous. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, David, I was wondering about that myself, and thank you for the call, Christian. To me, everybody was saying he was invisible. Well, whose fault was that? Like,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot that can go into that.
Don't make it like, I don't know that he didn't try to get open. No. You know, it's not that kind of situation.
What number are you in the progression? What are you in the route combination? Where are they tilting their coverage with the safety to? Was it more to that side with him or Sterling Shepard? Was it to the other side? And I get it. I was expecting more productivity out of him as well.
Everybody was.
I think everybody was. But also, with Odell Beckham Jr. out, it puts more stress back on him and the rest of the wide receivers. Because when Evan Ingram was drafted, because when in free agency we went out and got Brandon Marshall, what was everybody saying? These are unbelievable compliment pieces.
No, he's the guy.
To Odell
OBJ
Beckham
is the guy.
Jr. He is the guy. So when that piece was taken out and they had to become the focal points, like I said, the Cowboys' defense at that point weren't scared. They weren't scared.
This is one bullet, if you will, that can't shoot us. Mike from Oakland. Mike, how are you today?
Hey, well, doing better than yesterday. I couldn't even listen to the show yesterday.
Okay.
Welcome back, yeah, Mike. It's good to have you.
Yeah, thanks.
The sun did come out today. At least here in Jersey it did. Go ahead.
You know, it did, but you know, I've been seeing a lot of, like, really personal anger and insults at our offensive line, and you know, so that's kind of what I'm calling about. And you know, I think you guys kind of started on that path. You know, David talking about, you know, both lighting the fire under everybody and also the sick feeling that you used to wake up with after stinker, and you know, that was a huge stinker. So I just want to, like, talk for just 1 second, just vent a little bit about how we got here. So, you know, I said good coaching understands the player you have, puts them in the best situations. I didn't see a lot of that on Sunday night. You know, as far as a player goes, you nobody gets the NFL without a lifetime of hard work. I know they all have pride. And I'm just thinking about how we got here, right? Number one, Eric Flowers, he was a reach. He was a young guy. We drafted him with known technical flaws. He wasn't even on my radar that draft, right? But he played hurt his whole rookie season, battled through injury. I never heard he doesn't work and try hard. You know, when Laramie Tunsil fell to the Giants in 2016, I mean, my buddy and I already popped the champagne. We had Flowers moving to right tackle. Didn't happen. Bobby Hart, seventh-round pick, another young guy. And now he's waking up with the best right tackle in the NFL, albatross hanging around his neck. So, you know, all I'm saying is they got to play better, but they are what they are. And as a fan, I'm not going to get personal and attack these guys. I'm going to cross my fingers. I'm going to back my team. I'm going to hope they start Brent Jones at right guard. And I'm going to hope our game plan improves.
Well, that, Mike, thank you for the call, buddy. But that's all you can do at this juncture. I mean, no, there's no reason to give up on your team. They are your team. I don't care if they're losing. Again, they're not losing on purpose. They're not losing because they're not trying. So giving up on your team, to me, that's a non-starter right there. What they need to start doing is just playing better, which has to be Monday night against the Lions.
And this is a very interesting point that you brought up, Mike, about that pick with Laramie Tunsil. Laramie Tunsil still has not played offensive tackle. He's been an inside guard, left guard for the Miami Dolphins. Lyle Collins, road grader, all-out right tackle. He played guard inside up until this year. The only offensive tackle in the last 5 years that has really changed things and being able to come in and produce at that position was Jack Conklin, who played last year in Tennessee, where the Tennessee Titans moved up in the draft and were able to steal him before the Giants pick. If you think about this season, obviously free agency, there were guys out there, but the market was high. And then in regards to the draft with the pick before, the Giants took Evan Engram. The only offensive tackle that could have changed the dynamic of this group was Garrett Bowles, who went 20 to the Broncos. So throw him to the side because he was the only true left tackle that could have moved anything offensive line-wise to move Flowers to either right tackle or to guard or whatever anybody was thinking. So we are where we are right now, and this is the fact that it is. I mean, there's not going to be other offensive linemen that are on the roster right now, but it is up to the offensive linemen themselves to take this personally, which I know that they are. You know, Coach McAdoo and this offensive staff are going to put them back to work, but also there are things that they can do in play action, running the football, and blocking schemes with two tight ends that will help shore up the group. And we also have, as a running back, you see color hit it. If there's some type of pressure before you release on your route, what's more important, you hitting that color and having the opportunity to catch the ball or dodging it, having Eli sacked, and it being a completely unproductive play?
You know, to Nick's point, talking about not beating up on your guys and trying to support them.
No question.
Maybe I'm wrong, and again, it depends. You were talking about it. Your whole personality is tell me straight to my face. Let's not dilly-dally. If you had a game that sucked, tell me that you want it. But not everybody reacts that way. You know what? I think one big game out of Eric Flowers will not only go miles with the fans, I think, for him.
Because, without a doubt.
Because I think he's a young guy. A very young guy came into this league as a 20-year-old, and I think again, I'm not a shrink. I'm not inside his head. But I think the criticism gets to him.
Well, this is the thing to go along with that. What is one thing that can just silence everybody and make everybody quiet? Progress and winning.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the only two things that can really silence people that aren't there every day watching you or in that locker room or in that meeting room with you playing. The reason why this has escalated to where it is, and like you said, the offensive line getting it, is because this is still carryover from last season. They haven't done anything throughout the preseason or now this first game to change people's perceptions. And that's why you're getting hammered as an offensive line. And it's not easy. I've been on that part when you've had bad games. But the biggest thing is that it's still a carryover of the feeling and the taste that people had from last season, and they haven't seen that progress or change.
But you know what? Okay, so let's go back to last season.
Okay.
No, let's go back to last. You know what I'm going to say?
I think so.
Let's go back. And again, I'm not working for the offensive line chamber of commerce here. I'm just trying to make a point. We know this was a problem last year. We know it was a big problem on Monday night.
Yep.
However, let's go back to that playoff game in Green Bay. Did they lose because of the offensive line, or was it because of their best player who they were missing on Monday night dropped a couple of balls?
Yeah, well, all the receivers dropped.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, exactly. I know exactly where you're going.
So, you know, in fairness, yes, the offensive line needs to be corrected, be with this personnel or other personnel. And yesterday was too late, so it's got to start immediately. Dominic in Florida. You're on Big Blue Kickoff. How are you, buddy?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Great. How are you, Dominic?
I'm great, actually. huge Giants fan. I actually wanted to make 2 points and then get on to a question. One, I wanted to commend the defense for, like, not giving up extreme amounts of points. Just based on the time that they were on the field, and B.J. Goodson looked phenomenal in his first game. Very proud of him for taking a huge leap forward. Second of all, you guys made a point a little earlier in the show where Drew Brees and Tom Brady were getting, like, manhandled, and they were. But Drew Brees had, like, two new offensive linemen because their right tackle got hurt, and that kind of, like, It was scary to see the resemblance between guys that were together for like 3 years to a couple guys that were just thrown in there game one. And that brings me to my next point. Do you guys think that John Jerry should be put on kind of a leash? And if he doesn't do good this game, do we replace him?
Well,
or
you mean a short leash?
As an offensive lineman, you're already on a leash, regardless of what happens before the game.
Dominic, I think a lot of guys, and thank you for the call, my friend.
Thanks, Dom.
I think a lot of guys are in that situation. We were talking about it before. David and myself, that, listen, everybody's on notice.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have to wait till Monday night to be on notice. They were on notice on the plane ride coming home.
Oh, yeah. The coaches are sitting there watching the game on the flight back and all that stuff. And you bring up, like you said, a legitimate point here is that when you lose, especially week one, I mean, you're dissecting every single step, timing, play, situation. So each and every player are getting graded that exact same way. So from this point forward, like I said, what you put on film is what you're telling not only your team, but the rest of the NFL who you are as a player. And if you don't start changing that perception by the way that you come out and practice and earn it in front of the coaches, they will make changes.
Yep, that's for sure. And, again, everybody is on notice for that. 201-939-4513, the number. On Twitter, it's hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go to Greg from Georgia. Greg, how you doing today? You're on with Russ and Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Russ and Dave?
What's going on, buddy?
Greg from Georgia
Still soaking up the tears, man. But I'm calling, man. I know there's going to be guys that disagree with me and everything, and that's fine. I'm a huge Eli Manning fan.
I'm a huge Eli Manning fan, but I heard the but.
Yeah, but.
There it is.
I'm going to say this, man. After being, you are the starting quarterback in a professional football league for the same team for 14 years. When our quarterback steps on the field, there are things that I just don't like. And one of them is he doesn't come to the huddle with a presence of a command for the huddle. He doesn't show the emotion of losing. Like, hey, man, you made the wrong block. Get it together. Oh, talk to your players.
Greg,
you make a bad play, he's quiet.
Greg, calm down, Greg. Greg, calm down. Greg, calm down. All right, Greg. Greg, have a nice day. Enough's enough, my friend.
Greg.
Let me defer to my illustrious partner here, David Deal, who was on two Super Bowl championship teams with Eli and his attitude.
You always hear this, and it's so funny because when things aren't going well and adversity hits, how come he's not showing more emotion? He should be yelling and screaming. And then when things are tough and he's able to sit in there, handle the adversity, and come up with that big play to overcome it, oh, man, he's so cool and collected under pressure. That's who Eli is. He is a same person, whether there's prosperity or adversity in a play. And I will tell you this. He demands the respect, the attention.
And commands it.
And commands it from the entire offense and the team based upon the way that he prepares, his professionalism, his character, his love for the game, and his ability to be able to go to guys and pull them to the side and tell them what they're doing wrong. He doesn't have to be the big yeller and screamer. He's not Peyton, so he's not going to be that guy. But I guarantee you he's off on the side talking to the wide receivers, talking to the offensive coordinator, doing everything he possibly can to get people on the right page. And also, some of the things you don't see are some of the looks he gives you. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. It's like your parent or your grandparent telling you that. And he will single you out and pull you to the side. And believe me, every wide receiver I've ever been around, I'm open. No, you weren't. You had this. He is quick to shut him down and put him right in the right path.
You want to talk about leadership? Well, two things here. Number one, if you watched him after the game, put it on me.
Never throws anybody
under
the bus.
Nope. I mean, I'm covering a guy for 14 years. Never once, ever throws a guy under a bus. That's number one. And number two, you know, Eli has this Opie of Mayberry exterior. Inside,
he's got a fire.
He is like a heavyweight prize fighter. Tough as nails. You don't start 200 straight games in the NFL, regular season games, and win two Super Bowls not being a tough street fighter.
Prime example. I don't mean to throw anybody under the bus, but how many times did we see Reuben Randle run a route short or run the wrong route and not come back to the football and Eli throw an interception or a pick six? We all knew it watching the game. Anybody watching the game knew it. How many times would you ever hear Eli say that about him or anybody else? Zero. Never.
Tron from Maryland. Tron, how are you today?
Hey, what's going on? How you guys doing?
What's up, Tron?
What's up, Tron?
Hey, all right. So, I was at the game.
Okay.
And, oh, my God.
Long trip home.
Man, you have no idea. It was a madhouse.
I do. I have a perfect idea of what it's like to lose on the road in Sunday Night Football and sit on an airplane disappointed. I know the feeling, Tron.
And they were so energized. Like you said, they were so energized from Ezekiel Elliott being there. And it really made a difference. And
absolutely.
We came out. Offense came out so flat. It got to a point that, you know, towards the end of the game, you know, Cowboys fans next to me were saying they can't even gloat because we look so unready and look like we laid down. And
again, Tron, let me just say one thing, and you know, then Dave, you respond to it. The laying again. Tell me they stunk. Say, Russ. They stunk. They played lousy. It was terrible. I buy all that. Saying they laid down, that means they didn't give effort. That's the only thing I will dispute.
go along.
That's what they were saying. I didn't agree. Of course, you know, I had my back to the wall fighting all these guys, but, you know, not in a literal sense. But
I did. I talked about the emotion of Odell and what he brings and the swag and the confidence he brings out of other players. And when this is where it really got to me during the game, and it really started to hone in on me more where I started to see things, is that when Odell's out there, he's making plays, and you see the rest of the guys, I want to make the play. I want to get the next one. And in this instance, it was almost waiting to see who was going to make the next play instead of stepping up individually, somebody like Odell does, saying, I'm going to make this one. Who's got the next one? And that's a big difference when you have that confidence.
You drove from Maryland to Dallas for the game?
Oh, no. I flew.
Okay. Because I'm saying that would have been a long drive, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a question, too. I wanted to know, and I'll take it off the air, what percentage of the offense is predicated, you know, to Odell being on the field?
Well, thanks for the call, Tron. I mean, you can't say
because our first sample of it was with him not in the game.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. Because you can't look at last year's numbers because of the different players, Evan Ingram, Brandon Marshall, the different wide receivers and skill position guys that you have on this team. So it's hard to sit here and give a number or a percentage based upon not having the sample of seeing it week one with these other players.
Let me bring out something to you. And one of the callers brought it up. We were talking about it before. We were talking about drafting and the guy in Miami now.
Laramie Tunsil.
Okay. So they were talking about why didn't we get this guy or that guy. One of the big criticisms of the Giants last year was production from the tight end position.
Yeah.
A major, major situation.
Cover two.
They drafted Ingram, and they also signed, which a guy you and I were talking about last week, and I believe he is going to be a vital part of the team, Brett Ellison. So it's not like – I'm just saying, it's not like they did not address – situations that needed to be fixed.
And Shane Smith,
both
of those guys are
that's another one,
of the
Shane
offensive
Smith.
Line. Yeah, so, I get it.
So it wasn't like they were asleep at the wheel not doing anything. I mean, those were addressed, and everybody applauded Jerry Reese for addressing that situation that way. 201-939-4513 is the number here on Big Blue Kickoff. I'm Russ Salzberg, along with two-time Super Bowl champion David Deal. Let's go to Devin from Atlanta. Dev, how are you today?
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Good. What's up, Dev?
Hey, listen, I heard the other guy talking about Eli. I just want to address that real quick. Eli commands all the respect there is, so I'm that guy's crazy. But what Eli has to do is, got to be more creative, right? Do you agree with me?
Well, let's put it this way. His creativity took a hit on Sunday night with his most creative player not in the lineup.
Yeah.
This is true, but we got Evan Ingram for a reason, right? I mean, at times the guy was open. You see, what my problem is with Eli is as soon as Eli gets in trouble, there's no creativity. He just lays down. And that's the only issue I have with it. I love Eli to death. I'm a crazy fanatic Giants fan, but he has to be more creative when he's in trouble, when the pocket breaks down.
David Tyree, Super Bowl 42, wasn't creative enough for you? I had to throw it out.
Devin, you know what? We made that point last week. Again, and we're going back to, you know, two Super Bowls ago, you know, when the Giants won, but – those are some of the things that Eli, like David addressed before, and thanks for the call, Dev, that Eli doesn't get credit for. That David Tyree catch never happens.
Oh, yeah.
Never happens.
If the offensive line doesn't block anybody.
I mean, are you kidding me?
I know.
I mean, when the way he got it out of that, or in San Francisco with the next Super Bowl, the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, Dev, this is the thing that I will say. It's obviously – we know what we have in Eli. He is not a running quarterback. He is a pocket quarterback where when they run the football, what can they do? They can change the scheme and the launch point with the play-action passing game. But if you don't run the football and you're trying to run play-action, Not a single linebacker or safety is stepping up to respect the run, and that's certainly a circumstance that they faced in this game. Also, what does play action allow you to do based upon being able to run the football? It allows you to have a tight end stand a little bit longer and leak out late in a route, hoping that a linebacker will take something over the middle. It allows you to run nakeds, bootlegs. It opens up your playbook that much more. But once again, being able to be creative for this group and changing the launch point has got to be predicated on being able to control the line of scrimmage and running the football.
201-939-4513 right here on Big Blue Kickoff, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go to Jason up in Vermont. Jason, how are you today?
All right, how are you guys?
Good. What's up, Jace?
I just want to talk about the practice squad.
We're digging deep here today.
Yeah. Do they practice and go through game plans and meetings and everything else like regular players?
They're part of the team.
They do. The practice squad guys do everything with the football team. They go out. They're in every single meeting. They're in every single practice. They're in the drills. They're at weightlifting. They're in all that stuff. The only thing that they don't do is either go on the road trip and participate in the game or participate in the game at home. Other than that, they're in a full exact schedule up until game day.
And Jason, don't look, and thank you for the call, but don't look at guys on a practice squad, which I think some people do as, well, they're just there in case of an emergency.
Well, this is, I'm sure a lot of people are thinking about Travis Rudolph.
Yeah, exactly.
That at some point, if he continues to perform and shows it in the practice field, because he's going to get things thrown at him that are not only just for the other team's offense, but he's going to know situational football that the Giants' offense are going to be looking forward to against the Lions. How is he going to be able to adapt? And when that opportunity comes, you don't know when it is, whether it's the first week or the third week, and all of a sudden they take you from practice squad and they throw you into a rep. Are you going to be able to adapt and do it because you've been practicing and studying like you're getting ready for a real game? Or have you been sitting back thinking you're just a practice squad guy? In my 11 years, I've seen players step up and rise to the challenge, and I've seen players thrown in there. First two plays, they didn't know what to do, and they're out. Because you had your opportunity. You know that whether you're the starter, the backup, or practice squad guy, as a professional, it is your obligation to prepare just like the rest of the guys so that, like on Sunday, if something is to happen, you are ready to go into the game and play football.
You know, the kid, Adam Biznavati. Now, no. Okay, you know, he was drafted in the sixth round. He's on a practice squad. I mean, they didn't discard him. They like him.
They want to develop
him. They want to develop him. So, and you know what? Who knows? Adam Biznavati might very well be getting a chance sooner than later if the offensive line does not improve. So, again, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Kai from Maryland. Boy, a lot of people from Maryland calling today.
A lot of offensive line calls. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, Kai?
All right. Hey, David, I got a new nickname for you. I don't know if people have called you this yet, but I'm just going to call you David the Real Deal.
I got the Real Deal, Done Deal. We have our segment, Here's the Deal with the Giants. I've used it quite some time. Thank you, though, my man. What's up, Kai?
All right. I just wanted to touch on a little of what you guys talked about yesterday with Lance Meadow and Paul Dottino. A lot of what Lance said yesterday was predicated on the fact that we as fans should not panic or press the panic button because it's only been week one, and what he kept saying is we don't have a big enough sample size to say that the offense is struggling, but what I'd like to say to combat that is I believe that we do have a big enough sample size to be able to say that the offense, not just the offensive line, but the offense as a whole unit has been struggling since all of last season. And Ben McAdoo has had dual positions in both years. He was the head coach as well as the play caller last year, and he's doing the same this year. And under Tom Coughlin, 2 years ago, the offense was doing very well for themselves. Even though we didn't win a whole lot of games, the offense was doing a whole lot better. Now that he is calling the plays as well as being the head coach, we've been struggling ever since. And I just wanted to say that to combat what Lance Meadows said yesterday. And I just don't like the fact that we played Monday. I mean, we played Sunday against the Cowboys. You played them as if Odell Beckham was still on the field, like, you know, dinking and diving and only running the ball, what, seven, eight times the whole game for not even 20 yards, I believe. And it's unbelievable how John Jerry is still in the lineup as the starter when we picked up DJ Fluker, who I think, in my personal opinion, is a much better pass blocker as well as run blocker.
Well, I think, and thank you for the call,
yeah, thanks,
my friend.
Kai, I'll follow up after you're done.
No, but that's what I was going to allude to you. I think those are the things you might be seeing. I mean, as we said earlier in the show, I don't know if you were listening, Kai, everybody's on notice.
Yeah.
And they went on notice when they got on a plane Sunday night,
knowing that they lost the game in the fashion that they did. And I you bring up a great point, Kai, and I'll agree with Paul, and I'll agree we talked about it, and with Lance. Is it time to completely throw out the entire season? Nothing's worked? Absolutely not. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. We saw the defensive side of the ball last year go out and make moves and spend money in free agency. Obviously, they still did with JPP because he was the most valuable asset on the free agent market. But also, went out and got Brandon Marshall, went out and got Evan Ingram, went out and got Red Ellison, Shane Smith's here. People were going crazy. People were going absolutely nuts. We've changed things.
Everybody was applauding.
But you know what? You're right, Kai. Until you see that progress and until you see it presented and displayed at a consistent level on TV like they could have Monday night or Sunday night, that perception's not going to change. And that's why people are going nuts right now, because they still have that feeling and taste in their mouth that what happened last year is going to happen again. It is up to the Giants and the coaching staff and the players. In order to change that perception, you got to go out and win a football game and do it. And so I understand where people are very upset, and here we go again, and I get that. But get to the time where you were excited about Brandon Marshall, Evan Ingram, and all these other pieces that were meant to be compliments to the one player who wasn't out on the field, Odell Beckham Jr.
Again, like we said before, don't say that situations on the offensive unit were not addressed in the offseason, because they most certainly were. Again, that's not absolving
a
problem, okay? And that problem needs to be fixed. But as David says, situations were addressed.
Yeah.
And everybody was applauding each one of those situations when they were addressed.
But as a fan, until they see progress, till they see running the football and protecting Eli, that perception's not going to change. And as a player, you know that when you put that on film.
And you mentioned something before, progress. Fans don't want to see progress. They just want to see W's.
Yeah, well, progress equates to W's. That's
right.
It. But cures all. Vitamin W cures everything.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you know, if they play a great game and lose to the Lions, we're going to get the same calls.
Yeah.
We're going to get the same calls next Tuesday.
Based off of what? This performance,
right.
And it's just wheeling
it,
into it.
It becomes a
snowball effect.
Raldi from New York. Raldi, how you doing today?
What's up, Russ? What's up, Dave? How you doing?
What's up, my man?
A couple of things. And listen, I get it. We got the new weapons and everything like that. But there's a few blame to go around, from Jerry Reese not addressing that offensive line. But Ben McAdoo, it seems like Ben McAdoo has no idea how to even draw up a good game plan. And Paul was saying, oh, yeah, we still got to see a sample size. From the first caller, the previous caller before me, we've seen a sample size from last year. Yeah, we won 11 games and everything like that. But were we scoring over 25 points? No. The offense was horrible. Ben McAdoo had time to address and change the way he draws up a scheme for the offense. He's been horrible. John Jerry needs to be benched, and DJ Fluker, what's his name? Hart needs to be benched. That's it. I mean, these two guys were horrible last night. I hate to be these. I mean, if I'm a, if 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 I'm a, My father and I'm seeing them getting beat up like that. I'm going to feel embarrassed. They got embarrassed last night on Sunday night. Well, and for us, for people to say, okay, fans need to be calm and everything like that, it's only one game. It's not one game, Russ and Dave. We've been seeing it since last year. Ben McAdoo needs to give up the play calling. Give it to Sullivan because he has no idea how to game plan. You're looking at Evan Ingram. Evan Ingram, all you're doing is digging and dunking. You're not using the guy in his best position for him to play his game.
Raldi.
Come on, Russ and Dave, you know this. Ben McAdoo has no idea what the hell he's doing. Give up the play calling.
Slow down.
Raldi, question. What coaching staff have you been under? What coaching level have you been under?
Nothing, but I
understand that. I'm just drawing a question because I wanted to hear you say that. Coaching, there goes a lot into it. There is a lot of discussion and a lot of preparation that goes into it. And I get what you're saying. And once again, like you said, the small sample size is still a hangover from last season. I understand where you're coming from, my man. I get the arguments. I get where you're disappointed because you were expecting bigger things and had higher expectations for this team and for this offense. But so did this coaching staff and so did the players. But what they did throughout the preseason and what they did in this game clearly was not good enough. Now, with a mark on their back going 0-1, it is up to the coaches and the players to have themselves know that we're in a terrible position and the only ones that can dig our way out of it are each other. And that's where we're at right now. We could sit here and say whatever we want to say. They're not strategic enough. There wasn't enough scheme. They got to be more creative. The coaches are doing the same exact thing that you're saying. But what do we need? We need to see it put on film and on tape in order for us to take a deep breath and relax, thinking that times have changed.
I'm not saying this is what a bad, bad loss does.
This is what it does.
A bad loss turns a bad loss into a catastrophic, like, end of the world, and earthquake, hurricane. I mean, really.
And that's why I said this is the longest week of the year right now, because we're sitting here waiting until Monday, and they're still going to be beating the horse. Here it is.
That is just the way it is.
It is.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong.
That's part of only playing one game a week on Sundays, is that you sit every rest of the day of the week waiting to get to your opportunity to play again. In basketball and baseball, you may have a terrible game, but you got a game the next night after that.
So
you can wipe that memory very quickly. But in the game of football and in the NFL, you're waiting a full week, let alone Monday night football, to get those expectations and that taste out of your mouth when everybody's hammering you about what happened 7 days ago.
You know, in baseball, there's an expression, and I know you've heard it, momentum is only as good as your next night's starting pitcher. But you know what? It doesn't work that way, as Dave is saying, in football. Momentum, now you got to think about it all to the next week.
Without a doubt.
And a loss, you're not thinking of it. You're dwelling on the loss, especially a loss like that, because nobody is allowing you to forget about it, which you shouldn't. That's how you get better.
And like we said, with all of the expectations for this team, it's difficult not to.
Listen, everybody had high expectations. I'm not going to take any more calls, folks, because we're just getting ready to wrap things up. You know, David, one of the things that we haven't mentioned, and he certainly deserves mention, is B.J. Goodson.
18 total tackles, 14 solo. I mean, he was all over the football field. For his first game to be on the road in Dallas to communicate, to get everybody lined up, you saw plays where it was just sheer instinct and preparation from him watching film, being able to put himself in a position to make a key play. A lot of credit goes to B.J. Goodson. And I will say this, he is going to be needed greatly in this game because, you know, Matthew Stafford, who just threw 4 touchdowns, is going to come in with – we just love saying Jim Bob Cooter, the offensive coordinator. What a great name in football. But Jim Bob Cooter has completely changed Matthew Stafford's career to where he is the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. So you know that you have a high-powered offense that is going to try to spread it out. But also, you know you have a defense that held the Arizona Cardinals to, 11 rushes for David Johnson. He only had 23 yards before the injury. They intercepted, Carson Palmer three times.
They
play fast. Ziggy Ansah was back out on the football field. So they are a productive group.
No, listen, they have their hands full coming in. But with their record, you know what? In the National Football League, unless you're playing a complete dog, you have your hands full every week. And the Giants, they have a very tough schedule. I mean, look at these first three games. Dallas on the road. Then the two nationally televised games, a Sunday night, a Monday night coming up with the Lions. And then they got the Eagles. This is a very, very tough schedule that they have. They're playing the AFC West this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't get easier. Oakland is a very, very good football
team. And what each one of those teams have, 2 to 3 elite pass rushers.
Yeah, so it's up to the Giants to regroup. I believe they will. Now, if you want to call me naive for thinking that, so be it. Again, I've never been accused of being a softie on the Giants or anybody else. But, again, it is one game. And when you talk about the sample that they have, it is still one game. As David said, it's one game, but it is the first game. And it's the first game, and it's Sunday night, and everybody's watching. And believe me, I'm feeling exactly like the fans were.
We
I know
are.
You felt the same way. You're sitting watching. I'm making notes, and then I'm saying I throw the notes away. It says, who the hell wants to keep notes on this? Because it was just such a poor performance. But having said that, it's a new day tomorrow. Giants are going to get back in business. They're going to have to regroup. They're going to have to make adjustments. I'm sure nobody took it harder. I guarantee you this. Nobody took it harder than Ben McAdoo.
Nope.
Nobody took it harder than Ben McAdoo. And he said there's blame to go around to everybody. That includes himself. But in the meantime, for David Deal, I'm Russ Salzberg. Again, it is Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. Remember the number. We'll hear from you tomorrow, 201-939-4513. Have yourselves a great day.
Have a great one, Giant fans.